Thank you very much. That was a really fascinating talk. I'm really happy I got to hear that. So, what does meditation have to say towards a good response to COVID-19? It will be a really different kind of talk that I'll be giving now, so really switching gears. The information that can come from the practice of meditation for a COVID-19 response can give us some information towards good immunity, but also towards brilliant and effective and humane responses in research and policy, brilliant thinking and brilliant implementation of the thinking. So I'd like to talk about some meditation and what I call pre-meditation techniques. A lot of what we call meditation is really pre-meditation, preparing to be able to begin to meditate. So before we get into some practical suggestions, why would I be invited to speak in this conference or this workshop? What can we tap into to find our best response to COVID-19? We need to be in touch with reality in order to respond to reality. And so, to start to discern and determine the difference between reaction and response in our own personal experience. So, now I'm really talking to each of you who are listening as directly as I can. So, if you can feel for yourself when you feel reactive, are you aware of being reactive? If you feel defensive, are you aware of being defensive? Are you aware that you're not going to have the best thinking or implementation of your thinking when you're caught in a reaction? So the first level of reaction that we can address immediately is the alarm system, which would be the fight and flight response, hyperarousal, as well as the freeze response, the hypoarousal. And in between hyperarousal, being tense and overexcited and can't stop, and hypoarousal, where we're frozen and we can't move, we can't talk, we can't find words, there's what we call the window of presence and response. So, lowering our alarm system is important for our immunity, but also for our good thinking and good policy and good implementation of policy. Does that make sense? Does anyone have a question so far? So, being in touch with reality means noticing that the alarm system is on. So, first of all, if we can notice now where there might be some tension in the body that's not necessary. What does it feel like? Is it heavy? Is it tight? Is your heart going faster than it needs to go? Is your breathing shallower than it needs to be? And just the fact of turning our attention to notice that there is a state of mind and that there might be some alarm in the state of mind is already getting more in touch with reality. I'm less in touch with reality when I have a mind state and I'm not aware that I have a mind state. We always have a mind state. There's always a state of mind. The energy is high or low, we feel more extroverted or introverted, etc. Once we've noticed what is the effect of the alarm system on the body, that there is a state of mind and that there very often is some stress or alarm involved in the state of mind, that's already a little closer being more in touch with reality. And then we can feel, how is that mind state affecting the body? How is the heart rate? How is the breathing? Is there contraction? Are there areas of blankness? And then comes an important step to feel what else, to get in touch with a clearer reality. So, is there a mind state? Is there an alarm in the mind state? How does that feel in the body? We're getting more in touch with reality. And then, what else is also going on? There's that mind state, there's that alarm. What else is happening? So, we come to a direct perception. You may have heard there's a lot of hype around something that comes from the Indian spiritual traditions called mindfulness. So, direct perception. And also in trauma research of the recent decades, there's a lot of support for this mindfulness. Beginning with orientation, it's what it's called in the trauma research, which just means in traditions of Indian spirituality, being present, being here. Where am I? So you could play with this yourself, noticing that you're somewhere. Here you are, feeling your physical presence, feeling gravity, and noticing what you see, and even letting yourself just simply look around. All of this is so simple that we sophisticated, supposedly sophisticated people in the supposedly developed modern world will think that is silly or it doesn't make sense or why would I waste my time just noticing that I'm here? That's obvious. But to release the alarm system when the alarm system is unnecessary, which is much of the time our alarm system is on and is interfering rather than supporting us, we need to talk to the alarm system in the language that it can understand, which is not coming from the prefrontal cortex, right? No matter how many times we tell ourselves to relax, do we relax? But if I simply feel that my body is heavy, I simply let myself look around. There's a really simple trick that I find wonderful to play with is simply letting your eyes, your gaze shift to one side for 1 minute. Your eyes can even be closed and just looking as if turning your eyes to one side for 1 minute. Because the movements of the eyes are stimulating the vagus nerve, which communicates directly to the alarm system. And it's like having a dial that you can just turn down the stress, turn down the alarm. And you'll notice that already you can think better and you can much more easily follow through on what you know is sane and helpful and supportive. So orientation, direct perception, looking around, that what in Indian spiritual traditions could be called eye yoga, simply letting the eyes make a circle, letting the eyes rest on something that you like looking at. These are all things that at first we would reject as too simple or too obvious. But if you actually do it, it's a practice rather than a theory. It's a practice that has theoretical backup. And then we can come more into mindfulness of body or orientation, feeling the body. Noticing that there is a temperature or there are temperatures. If you feel hot, cool, there's heaviness, lightness, texture, movement. Simply noticing your right little toe. Simply noticing the back of your body. What I've noticed is that the more calm that you need, the farther from your head it might be good to go. So if you're feeling more alarm system, then going farther from your head, feeling your feet is surprisingly helpful, can be life-saving. And then we have the breath, a longer out-breath. Just try it yourself right now. Doesn't cost anything. Or simply breathing through the left nostril. We now have research backing up what people in India have noticed over millennia, that it matters, the breath matters, the breath makes a difference in the world of matter, and it makes a difference in how we experience reality. So a longer out-breath changes the chemistry of the body. Breathing through the left nostril changes the chemistry of the body and lowers the alarm system. We have another direct connection. Or along with the breath, sound. So humming or chanting or singing also activates the vagus nerve. And it's like having another dial to lower our alarm system. And then when we feel safe enough, calm enough, regulated enough, we start to be in the window of presence and response. We can actually begin living rather than being in survival mode. So that's pre-meditation. All of that is helpful towards meditation. It's fine that sometimes people refer to that as meditation, that being present, feeling the weight of the body, letting there be a longer out breath, experiencing how that affects your mind. It's fine to call that meditation, but it's actually technically would be more pre-meditation. So then we feel calm enough and we are here, we are present enough that we can start to notice changes in the mind. There can be an open mind. We start to realize the power of not knowing, knowing what we don't know. Because there are countless examples of people who are brilliant people doing years or even decades of research in a direction that was based on an incorrect foundation. So at the time in South Central America of the building of the Panama Canal, for example, the basic foundation idea was that malaria was caused by insects that would crawl from the ground onto the beds at night. And so they put the beds, the 4 feet of each bed, into a cup of water. And so they were giving the breeding ground for mosquitoes, which now we know are the vector for malaria. So the more we can get in touch with reality and a clearer and more direct, unfiltered reality, the more likely we'll be able to listen inwardly and outwardly to how to direct and where to start thinking from and researching from and developing policy from. So if you reflect on when and where you've had your breakthrough insights, your best thinking. Sometimes we can have good thinking when we're stressed, when we're in a situation that does need an immediate and practical response. But if you think of when you had a real breakthrough insight, it was likely to be, for example, you're just waking up in the morning, or you've just had a nap, or you're doing some kind of simple physical work or exercise, and the mind is free to be in touch with its brilliance and to let that come all the way through, the midbrain filter, what people call the emotional brain. Our experience comes in first to the emotional brain and then to the prefrontal cortex. And if our emotional brain is not attended and allowed to feel at ease, then our thinking is not in touch with reality. And so as we start to be in touch with that, I have a mind state, what is the mind state? Is there some alarm that's unnecessary in the mind state? How does that affect the body? And what else? What else is also happening that I can directly notice? A sense perception, something that I see or something that I feel in the body, sounds, etc. So then we're safe enough and here enough, which are loosely two of the seven factors of awakening in the Buddhist tradition, equanimity and mindfulness, that we can start to have vichara, we can start to have an open mind that's more interested in questions and the adventure of living rather than being someone who already knows the answer. Because what if your answer is based on a foundation that's incorrect and you didn't leave room to get a sense of that from the wider and more mysterious mind? There are also countless examples of great scientific breakthroughs that have come from a dream or from an intuition. And in order to have access to dreams and intuition, the creativity of the deeper mind, we can bring some of this lowering the alarm system so we're more in touch with reality and more in touch with the brilliance of our minds. In the past, there's been a sense that meditation and being practical or interested in the physical reality were two separate dimensions or paths. And what we're finding now with the help of the millennia of Indian spiritual traditions and now the more recent decades of scientific research on mind and behavior, that our best thinking can come from a more meditative mind, a meditation-oriented mind. So safe enough, here enough, that there starts to be an open mind. That's equanimity, mindfulness, and vichara, inquiry. And then there's a quality of joy that there's also now a lot of research showing the importance of turning our mind out of not only the alarm system, but from the alarm system, we get trapped in our programmed ways of thinking. And our biology, as well as our personal past, tends to direct us towards negativity or towards denial. And to consciously, deliberately turn the trajectory of the mind towards joy, appreciation, and gratitude. So just now you might want to play with that and feel what happens in your body and in your mind. I recommend to my students, who are people from around the world, from dozens of countries, thousands of people, to invest 80 to 90% of their practice, time, and energy and interest in shifting out of negativity into practicing what we've practiced less. So going against the grain of habit and programming, to practice feeling, not to pretend, but to actually leave room to feel appreciation, leave room to feel gratitude. And in this time of COVID-19, where we can easily feel a sense of impending danger or doom, it can go towards worry and negativity, anxiety, compulsive thinking, despair, but it could also help wake us up that life is short, and why not, with it being safe enough, regulated enough, here enough, open mind, inquiring enough, why not leave room for appreciation? It's good for our health. It's good for our thinking. It's good for being able to follow through on good thinking. And then there is energy and rest as two more factors of awakening in the Buddhist tradition. Usually we think of energy as one thing and rest as a separate thing. But what is rest? By doing nothing, you get a lot. By doing nothing, we're filled with energy. Our minds are cleansed. Memory is put in place. Immunity is boosted. Our immunity and the health of our body and mind and relationships is improved. So one of the single most important things that we can do, both to boost immunity and to have the framework in which we can do then our brilliant thinking, brilliant research, and brilliant policy making, and brilliant implementation, is to get enough rest and to value rest. And in a university environment, I would like to propose a question that's a hard and radical revolutionary question. What would need to change that students and faculty and administrators get enough sleep? What would need to change in the university culture that there's enough sleep and enough rest? And then those six factors of awakening: safe enough, here enough, open mind, joy, energy, and rest. If we notice, when we rest, we have energy. We have great ideas. We have a willingness, why not, to follow through on the great ideas, to propose them even if we were holding back because it's a bit unusual idea, it's a groundbreaking idea, or just to follow through, to be in a good flow. And then what can come naturally from those first six factors of awakening is the seventh, which is meditation, deeper meditation, samadhi. And from deeper meditation, we're in touch with deeper and deeper reality. We're in touch with an overview for the common good that's fulfilling. And so, as Gandhiji said, when he was asked about Western civilization, we could ask ourselves about our civilization, the mainstream civilization on the planet. That would be a good idea. It would be a good idea for us to be more in touch with reality, and from there, letting our response to COVID-19 guide and spark us towards a culture that's more sustainable. Because reality is fascinating and mysterious and limitless, and our reactivity is limited and dangerous. So coming towards the possibility of living and leading, thinking, researching, guiding, teaching, with 100% care and 0% anxiety, 0% alarm. So why do we want to have a good response to COVID-19? Because we care. And why do we care? Because we are connected. We belong to each other. And the more we allow room for being regulated enough, feeling calm enough, present enough, open enough mind, enough joy, enough energy and rest, then meditation is a natural part of human living and can help us beyond imagination, beyond what we could come up with a prefrontal cortex that's cut off by an alarmed midbrain. We can allow this crisis to be the breakthrough and the beginning ground of a more sustainable culture. So I did my best to speed through my talk so that I could end at the scheduled time, even though I started about 15 minutes after I was scheduled to start. But there are a couple minutes for questions if anybody has one. I'd be delighted to hear anything you'd like to ask or share. You're very welcome. My pleasure. Yes. Yes. If I could just clarify one thing about coming to fearlessness, very briefly. It would be tempting to say I shouldn't have fear because fear goes in a bad direction. But what I'm suggesting is noticing that I do have fear. And how does that feel in the body? And what else do I also feel? This is the fear in the body, and what else do I feel? That's the gateway towards living out of surviving, or unfortunately, people can be so it's so common and so easy these days that people are being overwhelmed by that fear and considering taking their lives. And please, I beg you, if that's your case, to please get support and know that it's possible. It takes work, inner work, but it's possible. Thank you.